We have thus witnessed how the general perception of life has become antiquated. And as this is naturally a basis for the formation of moral development, it means that terrestrial mankind is now going through a crisis concerning morality, a crisis which has already led to an increasing decline in that attitude of revenge and conquest which belongs to an old civilization. It has turned people's eyes away from ancient traditions and superstitions, and has aroused longings in them for a new and better civilization, for a purer view of life free from militarism and war, and for a world full of spirit, art and love. Moreover, we have seen in those chapters the guiding, divine forces behind all culture and creation of consciousness, the final analysis of which, under the concept of the creative principle, we concluded was the main factor in the nameless reality we shall learn to know later on in Livetsbog under the term X2. We mentioned that the said forces manifested themselves in the form of rhythms or impulses, each of which always left behind a new spiritual basis, and thereby a new and better civilization for individuals. Furthermore, we learned that the Earth's present spiritual basis, or world religions, have originated from such an impulse, which is now slackening off, or becoming outdated, and consequently a new impulse is already making its influence felt, and that terrestrial mankind is in the process of experiencing a world civilization's fall and a world civilization's birth. In this chapter we are now going to illuminate the more direct circumstances, or local details, in this great upheaval within the consciousness of terrestrial mankind. So we will point out here those realities in the terrestrial community that are imperfect and consequently on the decline, and those which are under development, those which have led to suffering and pain, and those that lead to harmony and happiness, or constitute the absolute, unfailing road to world peace. 70. In order to understand properly the state of consciousness of living beings, one will have to learn to understand the conditions of life under which they live. These can be of a greatly differing nature and, as shown later on in Livetsbog, will thus divide existence into various planes or kingdoms. Concerning this, we already know that terrestrial mankind still belongs to what we call the animal kingdom, as well as in some degree also representing the future real human kingdom. As terrestrial mankind thus finds itself in evolution, partly belonging to the animal kingdom and partly belonging to the human kingdom, it is also partly subject to the conditions of life of the animal kingdom and partly to those of the human kingdom. The daily life of terrestrial mankind thus comes to manifest itself as a struggle between these two conditions for maintaining life. Since the animal kingdom appears as the culmination of a material or physical state of being, each creature's conditions of life in the said kingdom will thus be dependent on its material or physical position, which again, in the case of animals, means the greatest physical strength, the sharpest teeth, claws or beak. In the case of terrestrial mankind, on the other hand, the animal position constitutes the largest armed forces, the best swords, rifles, guns, bombs and so on. This again means that where these realities are available or present to the greatest extent, there the strongest form of material power will exist. This power in the animal kingdom is a condition of life, as only the strong can progress and be successful, but within that part of terrestrial mankind's consciousness still belonging to the animal kingdom, this same power becomes the highest ideal, and hence at that same level of consciousness morally justified. The heroic figures representing this moral level are those who, by virtue of their strength, have triumphantly vanquished the weak in many ways, making them serfs, slaves or subjects, capturing their properties and subjugating their countries and their native soil. But when heroic figures with this kind of morality have this kind of nature, the fact demonstrates that the weak, still within the same level of consciousness, have no rights, and that any concept of justice should be one invested with power alone. Thus, in the animal kingdom, might is the same as right. Those people who have no power have no rights but are subjected to those who are in power. And now we are at the core of the dark radiation's morality. 71. As we already know that also a light radiation comes from the creative principle and, moreover, that this has already influenced the earthly zone over a short period of time and that this influence has the aim of developing a new kingdom on earth in which the condition of life certainly is not might but right, then we shall see that the said influence is identical with a gradual increase in the undermining of animal-like conditions of life. As this undermining leaves those concerned with tendencies which are contrary to the nature of the animal kingdom and which aim towards the conditions of life of the human kingdom, or the development of making right into might, so these tendencies are seen as being identical with the factors separating terrestrial mankind from the living beings we generally call animals. But these tendencies are not yet so pronounced that they have entirely changed terrestrial man into a fully developed or perfect human being. He is still largely a living being subject to the conditions of life of the animal kingdom, and hence, as we shall see, to a certain degree he is bound to live under the concept might is right. 72. As we mentioned before, over a short period of time the creative principle's light radiation has been in evidence and has consequently caused a corresponding effect. It has resulted in a combating of the animal principle which makes might a right. This combat has then developed into a system which, in its most obvious concentration, appears to us as the concept state power, the final aim and object of which, in the form of law and judicial administration, is to provide every citizen with help and support on the principle of making right into might. State power thus constitutes the present most fundamental result of the divine creative principle's light radiation. But we must here remember that, even if it does intend to make right into might for each individual, this is still a problem only for the future, a problem which, in its present stage, state power is very far from being able to solve. It stands quite powerless against the large areas in terrestrial mankind's manifestation of the animal principle of life by which might, in a corresponding degree, still appears as right in daily life. So it follows that to a great extent people in general strive for might rather than for right. 73. But as might has gradually changed for civilized beings to become identical with material values, and these are represented in a form we call money, striving for money becomes an ideal for terrestrial mankind in those areas where it is still subjected to the conditions of life of the animal kingdom. Terrestrial mankind's fight for existence is thus mainly a struggle for money. And it is in this, the struggle for valuable goods or money, that the animal instincts and tendencies still existing in mankind are released, making might into right, allowing the strong to exploit the weak and letting the clever manipulate the less clever, and so on. And here it is that state power has started to intervene, has started to counteract such exploitation, thus becoming the strongest factor in keeping in check some of the worst and most crude animal instincts. 74. But, as state power can only advance on the basis of previous experience, such experiences have first to take place. When such experiences have taken place and they appear to be in opposition to what is considered as being justice or morality at the time in question, then state power will institute new laws and prohibitions against the repetition of these same experiences. But this again means that state power finds itself a step behind the course of events. 75. Thus there will be a level of consciousness in life where material events or manifestations cannot yet be reached by the law or the power of the state, and that is where they appear so masked or disguised that they have not yet been sufficiently perceived by the majority of terrestrial mankind as being at variance with the true right or moral standard. At this level, the life principle of the animal kingdom that might is right can consequently reach its full and most expanded form of genius. But, as state power has, in fact, reached so far that it combats or guards against the old, primitive, original forms of seizure of goods such as simple physical robbery, plunder and assault, then the above-mentioned manifestation of animal tendencies cannot find adequate release along these lines, and consequently must find other ways, ways which have not yet been experienced sufficiently or understood as immoral. And in the face of this state power is still comparatively helpless. These ways have gradually taken on a fixed, concentrated form which again, under the disguise of commerce or buying and selling, can be released on that side of terrestrial mankind's daily life which we call the business world within this world, It is possible to cloak robbery and plunder in such refined mental or intellectual forms that to the ignorant masses they simply shine as moral ideals, being authorized and protected by law. Later on, of course, they become exposed when people gradually experience pain and suffering from the true identity of those disguised realities. Thus, the business world actually appears as constituting a refined form of terrestrial mankind's struggle for valuable goods. This is war transferred onto another plane, but the results are the same as those of ordinary war, namely ruin, poverty and oppression for the vanquished, and wealth, luxury and power for the victors. Terrestrial mankind's daily fight for existence has thus gradually taken on the form of commerce. 76. And so the business principle has become fundamental to terrestrial mankind's whole instinct of self-preservation. It dominates the entire material world. Everything is business. Nations are trading, political parties are formed on business, citizens are forced to make deals, life itself has become an article of commerce. Life is bought and sold. As the whole of existence, by virtue of cosmic laws, can only be maintained on the basis that every value is balanced by an equivalent value, then the business principle, in its finest analysis, is of a noble and cosmic nature, and only becomes ignoble and antisocial when it reaches the point where large groups of the community's strong and healthy individuals are prevented from being able to pay value for value, or when large groups of individuals are unable to buy themselves out of that said divine reality. Such conditions will always come about in cases where something is paid for by a price that does not reflect its real value. Thus, one can talk about an excess price as well as a cut price. In both cases there will be a profit, but in the first case it falls to the seller, while in the latter case it obviously falls to the buyer. Such a profit is an unpaid commodity, or a something for which there is not a paid something in return, and consequently, when this surplus is transferred to the buyer's or seller's private property, it must create a corresponding deficit in the whole world economy, as we will realize from what follows. The more often that kind of depreciation in world economy takes place, the more outstanding the arrears and the more accumulation of unpaid values there will be. These accumulations are again identical with all that comes under the idea of private capital. Not included in this is whatever individuals possess of daily vital necessities such as food, clothing and shelter, for these cannot be expressed as capital until they overstep the boundaries of necessity and thereby assume the character of profit. When someone has, for instance, 40 suits of clothes in the cupboard, but the necessary number is only 4, the other 36 suits constitute capital. But as these 36 suits are actually quite unnecessary to the individual in question, they represent something worthless, for being private capital, they are untouchable for the rest of the community. The same thing is valid when an individual has an annual income of, say 100,000 kr, while the necessary income for his healthy, and cosmically seen normal necessities of life in the same period is only 5,000 kr. The remaining 95,000 kr. Is then, cosmically seen, unnecessary capital for the said individual, at the same time as it constitutes as private capital a corresponding deficit in the housekeeping accounts of the general community. Remark, that this is the values from the 1930s, when this book was written. Now continues from book. Now, objections may very well be raised here to the effect that the private capital of such a person would, after all, benefit the community, as he might give food and work to many of his fellow men, but we must reply to this that anything which benefits the community in such a way would naturally have to be deducted from the private capital, which, when it comes to it, represents useless profit. However, it is quite right that a person with a large private capital is able to provide food and work for many of his fellow men, but, as it is not yet a general rule that this is the owner's actual intention regarding his property, but on the contrary it is more generally considered by the representative of capital that work power is a necessary evil or an unavoidable means for the maintenance and increase of private fortune, an expense, therefore, which like other expenses must be kept down to the minimum, then that part of private capital from which the community will benefit in the form of food and work will be only a small fraction. Here we give an example. Man has 10 individuals in his employment. With the help of the abilities and work power of those 10 individuals, he is able to carry out a piece of work which gives him an income of 150,000 kr a year. From this amount, the workers receive 5,000 kr in wages, while 30,000 kr go in taxes, rents and other working expenses. To the person concerned, only 5,000 kr is necessary, cosmically seen, for his own healthy and natural necessities of life. So the sum total of all his expenses is 85,000 kr. This amount deducted from the income gives a profit of 65,000 kr, which, as the private capital of the employer, is lost to the community. This means, therefore, that with the help of 10 fellow men, he is able to reduce the capital of the community by 65,000 kr, or to make his fellow men in the community poorer by that amount. To obtain food and work for 10 of its members in this way, it would have to give 65,000 kr as a bonus to the employer. When the owners of capital give food and work to others, it is therefore not free of charge, but costs the community enormous sums, some so large that sometimes the community is unable to pay them. As we shall see later, the result is destitution. This example shows that everything gained as profit and existing as private capital is thus identical with bonuses the community has had to give to the owners of capital, so that people can be permitted to earn a few of the barest necessities for the maintenance of life. The product which gave the employer the profit in the above example could therefore have been given to the community cheaper by 65,000 kr. Every profit of this kind, whether large or small, will now become a further liability for the community, because, just like power, such profit makes it possible for its agent to oppose the payment of his levies, such as wages and taxes due to the community, and to reduce them as much as possible, thereby enriching himself still more, and so the process continues. As this is the general principle in the present business world, and thereby the general principle of terrestrial mankind's instinct for self-preservation, it is not so difficult to see that people appear in two sharply defined camps, one made up of those who have appropriated valuable goods as private wealth or private capital, and another made up of those who possess nothing. As valuable goods represent power, the camp which has appropriated them will represent the stronger material power and will appear in the world as money power. Since the camp which possesses nothing is made up of a great multitude of people, it will in reality form the true community. Because of its majority, this camp also becomes a power, though much inferior to money power. This power represents the dawning power of the community or state power. 77. As the money power camp thus possesses the valuable goods, that is to say, all the necessities of life, then the other camp is forced to buy the necessities of life from the first. But just as the example showed, the people with the money power are not interested in this kind of trade unless it is based on acquiring new valuable goods, and that can only take place by overcharging. As the people from the opposite side have basically nothing to offer but their skill or work power in exchange for their necessities of life, and the other people must receive from this payment an excess price, the result will be, therefore, that any work done can only be bought by money at a cut price, and that any necessities of life, according to the above, can only be sold at an excess price. The result of this is that the valuable goods or necessities of life will inevitably accumulate in one of the communities above mentioned two camps, while at the same time they will disappear from the other one, which again causes superabundance, greed and idleness in the former camp, and poverty, malnutrition and servitude in the latter. But, as poverty, malnutrition and servitude are identical with ruin, the facts mentioned here mean that one part of society is undermining the other. The whole of the terrestrial community is sapping itself. Everything which comes under the concepts of wealth, greed and idleness constitutes, then, good fortune, which definitely can only be maintained on the basis of the ruin of the community. 78. But, as life in its divine nature is beyond ruin, the community cannot die, only a system can die. The present system of the community is thus dying, annihilating itself. This is all the more noticeable now, For the general principle in the present order does indeed mean that any terrestrial person coming into the world without being heir to capital will be an oppressed person or someone who, in reality, is subject to the power of money, and as such, in the form of slavery, is forced to pay an excess price for his existence, in other words, his daily necessities of life. But, as every kind of life is searching upwards towards freedom and light, so every form of oppression will animate a struggle against the yoke. And the means for fighting against terrestrial mankind's material oppression in the first instance will be money. With money one can buy oneself out of money power's servitude and oppression. The most important or most central factor in the terrestrial community's consciousness will therefore be money. According to how much money one has, one is free. One is placed higher and higher on the material social ladder, and the more one will be admired, honored and respected. So to be the owner of a fortune constitutes an ideal for terrestrial people. And consequently, all upbringing and education is also based on making the individual as well qualified as possible in the struggle for material gain. To be qualified to acquire money thus constitutes a condition of life in terrestrial mankind's instinct of self-preservation, as it is indeed the only means by which it can liberate itself from oppression and poverty. But, as becoming a capitalist is the universal goal, or a goal for which every terrestrial person is trained, then those who have already reached this goal cannot be blamed at all, especially because, as a rule, it is only owing to force of circumstances and not to voluntary renunciation of valuable goods on their part that those who are opposed to capitalism today are not capitalists themselves. If the people in question had had the same conditions as the capitalists, they would in the same manner have appeared as owners of wealth. But when these facts are so rooted in education and conditions of life, it must mean that they originate from people's religious or moral standard, and this means it is a question of development. That is to say, this condition will only change in proportion to the gradual development of the whole of the terrestrial community. It would not, therefore, be of any help even if people with money gave away the valuable goods to the other part of the community, or if the valuable goods were suddenly equally distributed between all the individuals of the community. Before a day had passed, the conditions would be exactly the same as previous to the distribution, in that a great number of individuals would then be ruined and others would be rich and prosperous. The real fact of the matter originates in the whole of terrestrial humanity not yet having entirely grown away from the animal kingdom. And to the same degree as it has not grown away from this kingdom, it will also be bound to show the tendencies of the same kingdom, its manifestations and its conditions of life. Therefore, no blame can be placed on the present social order, neither on the power of money nor the power of the state, neither on the rich nor on the poor, neither on the criminal nor on the priest, for the social order in question is compelled solely to be an expression of exactly that level of evolution which the average terrestrial consciousness has reached. Just as we cannot demand that a four-year-old child should manifest anything but the behavior of a four-year-old child, and an 80-year-old person the behavior of an 80-year-old person, so one should not demand either that the whole of terrestrial humanity should manifest a higher step in evolution than that which it has reached so far and which is precisely and fundamentally expressed by its present condition of life and social position. That this condition of life and social position may be of an unpleasant and painful nature does not mean that it is at variance with the divine world plan or with the concept, "Everything is very good," for it is just as natural that terrestrial mankind, in evolving out of the animal kingdom and into the real human kingdom, must traverse all the intermediate grades in the zones of experience in order to become grown up in real human existence, as it is natural for every child that is born to go through all ages and zones of experience in childhood for it to be able to grow up into an ordinary life. Just as the little child, not yet knowing that a hot stove cannot be touched without the bare hand getting burned, does touch it and burns itself, so is it with terrestrial man himself. His social order and conditions of life express the fact that he is in a zone where, in many areas, he is burning himself, which again means that he is experiencing the fact that he should have acted differently in those areas. So, if the terrestrial human community has arrived at this conclusion, It is actually due to the pain and suffering caused by its own wrong actions. Solely concentrating on the animal principle, every man for himself or better to take than to give, which, as we have just noted, has been the general principle in terrestrial mankind's instinct for self-preservation. 79. The terrestrial community is just coming to a realization that the present basis for the existence of peace and security no longer lies in physical power alone, for this crushes everything, regardless of right or wrong, but that this physical power, on the contrary, when inextricably bound up with right, will prevent all forms of dissension, war and mutilation. The knowledge terrestrial mankind is gradually acquiring through its dark experiences will then, in the very highest degree, animate a combination of physical power with real right and morality and with the law of existence itself. The road to the great peace thus goes exclusively through this association of right with might, and to the degree that terrestrial mankind succeeds in fusing true right with might, so to the same degree will peace exist on earth. 80. This fight of terrestrial mankind to unite right with might has been taking place ever since the divine creative principle's light radiation began to influence the globe, and, caused by the present experiences of mankind and the new world impulse, it will now take place in a quick process of change and at a speed many times faster than hitherto. This fight, then, has developed from the animal instinct of self-preservation with its condition, every man for himself, and on the basis of the fact that within the animal kingdom no other protective principle exists. In the animal principle of self-preservation there is, as mentioned above, no sense of rightness. Might alone dominates. And those living beings who were most highly qualified to forward the said principle necessarily had to conquer and become masters of the other living beings in the animal kingdom. These former beings became the founders of the present terrestrial human community. They became its Adam and Eve. And as they did not yet know any difference between good and evil, but were inspired wholly by the single idea, or instinct, every man for himself, and this again, in the evolutionary zone in question, was in fact the law of existence which they were not yet sufficiently developed to be able to break, they lived a life of paradise, which means, in true contact and harmony with their own kingdom. And, as this kingdom was the true animal kingdom, it became a garden of paradise for all those living beings. 81. But as the Almighty, in accordance with eternal law, continuously leads living beings forward and upward towards greater and greater light, nearer to perfection, its message was also heard by the first ancestors of mankind. Its beam was over all living beings in the form of a divine creative principle's light radiation. Then it was that the light of justice shone for the first time on the earth, and in this light the first Adam and Eve saw that they were naked. But this realization was the first feeble glimpse of a kingdom which was not of this world. And by this glimpse or first realization of right instead of might, their accustomed animal way of life or the principle might instead of right was revealed to them for the first time as being sinful. The animal was thus transformed into a dawning human being, and through this change began its adversities and its disharmony with the kingdom to which for centuries it was still to be bound. The animal had thus begun to acquire the first feeble form of human consciousness. And as this form of consciousness in the said beings is always in the process of expanding, it therefore indicates that at that time they were moving further and further away from their harmony with the animal form of consciousness. They were on their way out of the Garden of Paradise. This exodus, or expulsion from the Garden of Paradise in its final analysis, is the same as the evolution of the said living beings from the animal kingdom to the human kingdom. Just as the fool may similarly be identified as the collective manifestation of the tendencies they inherited from the animal kingdom appearing in contrast to the dawning of human tendencies. And those living beings who are thus on their way out of the animal kingdom can now be recognized collectively as constituting terrestrial humanity. Today, terrestrial humanity is as strongly as ever before on its way out of the Garden of Paradise, or in other words on its way towards abandoning the condition of animal happiness. 82. But when, as a result of the dawning of the divine creative principle's light radiation, people's habitual way of life and instinct of self-preservation became more and more antagonistic to their changing state of mentality and became a greater and greater foe, Their ability to forward or fulfill the animal condition of life began to degenerate. And through this degeneration arose their real sufferings. The earth had been accursed, so to speak,